Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben. Presented by Breaks Plus, a little question chat here, and this one's coming from a few different people. So you being a former NFL linebacker for 15 years, you know the position, you are an authority, you are an expert. So the question is, have you had a chance to look at Brandon Browning, who was taken in the third round, and what do you think?
I had a chance to look at him, and I've seen him play over the last couple of years. He has maybe the best physical skill set of any linebacker coming out this year. Size, speed, movement skills. All his issues, angles on tackles, consistency in play, not getting caught up in the trash in the run game, all those things are all coachable and correctable. But for a guy with his incredible skill set, as highly as he was recruited out of high school, didn't see the progression of play that you would have hoped that the skill set would indicate. So is it going to be a case of you get in a, you know, Vic Fangio coach defense who's now the linebacker whisperer and he corrects all those wrongs in your game? Hopefully so. That's what, but there's a reason why he went in the third round despite that amazing physical skill set. I think everybody's not sold that it's all coachable. Is this a guy who's just not going to get better? Has he capped out? Has he mentally capped out? Is he going to be able to correct these parts of his game? The last 2 years, you would have expected a bigger jump from 19 to 20. I didn't see a huge jump. I saw a guy who got incrementally better, but not a big jump. So I think given a slow start to his rookie year, let's put him in positions where he can be successful. Let's not overwhelm him. Can't be a day one starter kind of thing. Let's situational, rotational kind of thing, and then give him more as he digests. He's the kind of guy who I've played with where you come and you go, oh, my gosh, this guy's a stud. And then the pads come on. You go, oh, man, he keeps taking that same angle over and over and over.
So he needs to be taught. He needs to learn how to play linebacker.
He needs to play, yes, professional linebacker. When you're bigger, stronger, and faster than everybody, it's all so easy. But at some point, you've got to learn how to play and do the nuances of the position. That's why he won the third round, because he is fantastically gifted. But now he needs to learn the nuances of being a linebacker.
All right, well, then
the technician part of it.
That leads then to the next question. Based on your experience, guys you played with, played against, studying the game for as long as you've been involved with pro football, how often do these physical studs master the art of playing linebacker?
It's 50-50. It's always going to be up to the individual. Are they motivated externally? Are they just happy with where they're at? Are they happy they made it to the NFL? Do they have some burning desire to be an NFL great? It all comes down to those little things that you really can't tell from watching tape. It's the mental makeup of this person. Very few guys with that skill set are incapable of taking the next step. It's all just a choice within them. You know, for me, I came in as a pretty good athlete, but I definitely need to get bigger and stronger and learn how to play with power. And that took years to do that.
But you kind of came in with a understanding of the nuance of the position, right?
Well, I played with great linebackers at CU. We had a great linebacker tradition, so I had that on my side. But I just simply wasn't a big, powerful man at 22 years old. I wouldn't say I was even powerful until I probably got to Seattle. In Pittsburgh, I got by on other things until I learned, until I became a much more powerful human being. So it all happens at different points for everybody. I think the biggest thing about him is he has the shot. From a pure draft pick perspective, he has a shot of being a very good linebacker. At this point, it's going to be up to him. And, you know, some coaches are better at lighting fires under people. Some aren't. Does he get with Reggie Herring and become that guy and get a fire lit under him? Reggie Herring is certainly going to coach him. He's certainly going to use his loud voice. Anybody who's ever been to a Broncos practice, you can hear Coach Herring loudly and clearly. Is that too much for him? Does he shrink in that moment? Does he rise up in the moment? We'll see. But the skill set, the opportunity, the chance is clearly there.
So how much of a difference is it? You're a linebacker, but how much difference is there between being an outside linebacker and an inside linebacker?
At this point, not very much. I think the distinction is, are you an edge guy or are you a linebacker?
Mm-hmm.
He's a linebacker. An edge guy. He's not on the line of scrimmage, battling with tight ends, battling with offensive tackles.
This isn't DeMarcus Walker who you... Is he a linebacker? Is he a DN? Is he a DN? Is he a linebacker? Which did not work to his advantage. This guy is a pure linebacker.
Playing off the ball linebacker. So whether you're off the ball outside linebacker and off the ball inside linebacker, there's far less difference between that and being a off the ball linebacker and being a edge guy, a Von Miller, Bradley Chubb. You move Von Miller and Bradley Chubb to a off the ball linebacker, they're a fish out of water. That is not what they do. They are go forward guys who want to attack. Off the ball linebackers, comfortable playing the run, comfortable dropping back in coverage, man coverage, zone coverage. They've got a feel for that. This guy is a much more off the ball guy than a true edge guy. So I'm not concerned about him, whether he's an outside guy or an inside guy. He's an off the ball guy. He should be able to play any of those spots.
So did you get a chance to look much at Micah Parsons?
I did.
So
he's a beast.
But does he know how to play linebacker? What's his learning curve?
The technician part of the game. He knows how to play linebacker.
Okay.
And because
he's more advanced than Browning is.
Yes.
Okay.
And because he is so fast and plays with such an edge that sometimes goes over the line. As a coach, your job is not to light a fire. Your job is to temper it a little bit. Let's tone that edge down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We can't go over the line all the time, man. You can't be 100 miles an hour all the time. So as a coach, I'd much rather have that guy than a guy who I'm trying to light a fire under. Not saying that's Brownie where you have to light a fire
under.
But from a Micah Parsons perspective, he needs to be reined back a little bit. I want a guy like that.
Yeah, you always want that. Yeah.
Yeah, give me that guy every single time.
So, and I understand I'm talking to a linebacker here. There might be some positional bias. But would you have taken Parsons over Surtain? Parsons was my number one choice. I didn't throw a fit when they picked Surtain because at least it wasn't a quarterback that they overdrafted. So whether it was Parsons or Surtain, there was an element I was happy with. And there was certainly a need for both. But I make no secret, I've been jonesing for one of those Levante David, Devin White type linebackers for a while now.
Well, I think we all have.
Yeah. Should they have gone Parsons instead of Surtain?
Okay, what's the issue you're trying to solve if you're going after this linebacker? And if you think about the Darren Wallers, and if you think about the Travis Kelce's, Parsons, I don't think he addresses that need. It's easy to watch the Super Bowl and watch White and David and watch them play that inside linebacker spot and make plays all over the field. Because if you have a dynamic inside linebacker, it's very difficult to take that guy away. Bradley Chubb, Von Miller, an edge guy, you double him, you chip him, you line a tight end over them, you can take that guy away. It's very difficult to take away a true dynamic inside linebacker. And we saw that in the Super Bowl. Those guys are making plays all over the field because you just can't take them away. Parsons, I think, gives you that possibility, but does it address what's one of the biggest needs in the AFC West is a guy who can handle Kelce and Waller, and I don't think Parsons is the guy to do that.
Okay,
so I understand.
So they missed out on that. Then.
So I understand why George Payton didn't make that choice.
Okay. I remember a time when Aqib Talib matched up against some pretty good tight ends and did really well.
Keeps leaves a big corner.
Big corner.
Yeah.
Is Surtain big enough?
I don't think as a rookie. He's got the length, I think, to run with those guys. But when it comes down to getting bodied in a more of a NBA paint kind of style, Travis Kelce and Waller going to body the heck out of Surtain.
Right.
It's a man versus a boy.
But you know what, Chad? Is it, for all the talk about here, God, you know, we get torched by Kelce and Waller, and we don't have anybody to match up with these tight ends. Who does? Seriously. I mean, look around the league and look at the numbers that these pass-catching matchup nightmare tight ends continue to put up. Why was Noah Fant drafted in the first round? It was because the idea was that he was going to be hard to cover. Why was Kyle Pitts, you know, viewed as one of the, maybe the best player to come out of this entire draft?
Is because
really
defenses have no answer for this guy.
They have no answer for these kind of guys. We live here in our own backyard. We make it sound like it's a Bronco issue, but it's an NFL issue. I don't know if we should be like harping on the Broncos when the whole league seems to still be trying to figure these guys out.
Can you eliminate those guys?
No.
No, you can't. But if Alexander Johnson or Josie Jewell are matched up with either one of those, it's an automatic win. Devin White or Lavonte David, you can survive the down. Patrick Mahomes might go someplace else with the football. But as soon as the formation is aligned, and maybe you do some motions and you indicate to Patrick Mahomes it's man coverage, and he knows it's Josie Jewell or Alexander Johnson, he knows where he's going with the football. So, yes, you can't take those guys away, but you can create a more favorable matchup for yourself. Yeah, there's no one in the NFL who's going to walk on that field and be able to run with, outbody, and be so great in zone coverage that those guys are eliminated. But at least give Patrick Mahomes a question mark in his mind where he wants to go with the football. The Broncos don't have that guy right now.
They don't
now.
Have anybody.
No.
Still don't. But Parsons, in your mind, wouldn't have been that guy either.
No, I think at this point, he's a go-forward guy anyway. He's not a, you know, coverage guy. And that the best coverage linebacker in the draft was a kid out of Notre Dame who's really going to be probably more of a nickel nickel linebacker guy. So that guy would be exposed in the run game, although he presents an upside in the pass game.
Right. Do you like the fact, because you hear this term used all the time now, that NFL defenses have become positionless, you know, and it's not the traditional, you know, this is your free safety, this is your strong safety, this is your inside linebacker, this is your outside linebacker, that you're getting a lot more of these amoeba types, you know, they can do multiple things. Are you kind of a little jealous that you came along when you did? Because I don't know, I kind of wonder that you would have been maybe perfect coming into the NFL. Like you described yourself, hey, I was really athletic, I had to get stronger. But let's say you came into the NFL today. Would you have had to necessarily get stronger? Or would you have been allowed to still stay kind of, you know, the athlete that you were, and we'll use you different ways?
I think it would depend on where that particular coach or coordinator saw me. Am I an edge guy who can play linebacker? Well, then I need to be strong because I'm fighting with offensive tackles every play.
Okay.
Or am I an off-the-ball athletic guy who's now, you know, chasing tight ends? Because I certainly did all that during my career, and depending on who the coordinator was, well, suddenly I'm always on third down, I'm rushing the quarterback. But there were also years where on third down, I came from outside linebacker and went and played dime linebacker, and I'm covering Tony Gonzalez down the field. So I was a guy who had, you know, both skill sets, where I was needed and where I was best. I don't know. So in some ways, my stats are kind of middling. If I was a dedicated edge guy my entire career, yeah, I would have ended up with well over 100 sacks. I ended up with 80 because there were years in some of the prime of my career where I was chasing Tony Gonzalez. I was nowhere near the quarterback. So I don't know.
Was that a year-to-year proposition? Like, would you show up like not exactly sure? Do I have to bulk up a little bit this year? Do I have to drop some weight this year? Am I going to be more of a power guy, more of a finesse guy? Was that literally a year-to-year thing?
It was a year-to-year thing.
Wow.
So when Mike Holman's staff came in, they brought Fred Shermer, they were in Green Bay. They didn't have linebackers who became edge guys. they had Reggie White on the edge. So their plan was, well, we'll play Chad at a dime linebacker spot, and we'll get a defensive end to play on third down. So I went into 2 years where I was not a primary rusher, despite, you know, having, you know, my success as a rusher in Pittsburgh. I didn't fit the physical prerequisites that they were looking for that position. You know, of course, the year before, I was, you know, Jim Johnson was a defensive coordinator. So I was, you know, blitzing all over the place because that's Jim Johnson's thing. I was on the ball. I was off the ball. I was doing all kind of weird stuff because that's his style. So coordinators come in. They got the best idea for you. I would have loved to have been Kevin Green. Mm-hmm. Kevin Green was a left outside linebacker, 3-4 defense. He was a mercenary for hire. Kevin didn't even drop to his right, because he only played left outside linebacker. So when we would do, like, drills, he never even practiced his pass drop to the right, because he only dropped to left, because he only played left outside linebacker. He only played one position. It worked for him.
Got in the Hall of Fame?
Hall of Fame. 15 years, 160 sacks. No one can argue with that success. He knew what he did, and he demanded that he play that style only. Whereas I went to teams and, you know, I'm an agreeable kind of guy. Sure, you want me to do this? I'll do this. You want me to be the edge guy? Well, I'll be an edge guy. You want to be this guy? I'm on the ball. I'm off the ball. I'm fighting tight ends. I'm chasing tight ends. I don't care. It's all football to me. So I was already kind of that guy, but it just all depended on who was a coordinator.
Did you ever have moments, private moments, where you'd be like, if I just pushed to be just a pass rusher, the numbers I could put up, the money I could get paid. Did you think about that kind of stuff?
Did you always come back
to the idea of, hey, look,
I'm a team guy. And I had some conversations with coordinators after the season and say, you know, I just don't think that was the best way to utilize my skill set, but I'm always going to defer to what you guys want to do. You got a hole, let me fill it. You got a plan for me, I'm going to do my damnedest to make it happen.
Belichick reached out to you specifically more than one occasion just because he wanted you to cover tight ends.
Yeah, well, I mean, I when I first got there, I was to replace Teddy Bruschi, who had the stroke the year before. So I was an outside linebacker for years and years and years by this point. Now he wants me to play inside linebacker. Mm. I was the leading tackler for that Patriots team my first year there before Teddy came back. Teddy comes back. There's not much of an inside role for me. Now I shift to outside linebacker. Playoffs roll around. Chad, you know, we got a bunch of old dudes playing linebacker. You're maybe the fastest guy we got. I want to put you in coverage, and you're going to chase tight ends. You're going to chase Rod Smith on crossing routes. We play the Broncos that year in the playoffs. Rod Smith runs a couple crossing routes. I make tackles. I stop him from getting the first downs. Whatever job you need me to do, it's all football for me. Mm-hmm. Not everybody else, I think, has that mindset, nor that skills. Kevin Green is in the Hall of Fame, but he couldn't do what I did.
NFL becoming too specialized?
No. These kids coming to the NFL now are far smarter than I ever was from a schematic standpoint. The ability to watch YouTube and learn the schemes is just far greater. I was a football neophyte when I walked into the Steelers locker room. These guys are so much smarter than I ever was at a younger age. They understand the more of the schemes. They understand the bigger picture of it all. They can play multiple defenses. I think that whole 7-on-7 thing in high school really works out well for them, but I don't think they understand some of the physical part of it, the technician part of it, the leverage part of it. That part of it is only learned by playing. You can watch videos and figure out what cover 2, cover 3, cover 4 is and all that stuff. All the videos in the world aren't going to teach you how to, as a smaller man, lift up a 300-pound man. That just takes doing.
Yeah, as we've been talking, I had a chance. I brought up all your stats. By the way, they must have taken away a sack. You have 79.
Yeah, that's been a bone of contention for a long time. 1 year I had 8.5 sacks in Seattle, and suddenly 6 months after the season was over, I had 7.5, and I've been fighting with Dave Pearson, the
1998?
The guy responsible for the stats in Seattle for a decade plus about that one.
You like to get back to 80?
as much as I don't like round numbers for my alarm clock,
right,
80 sounds a lot better than 79.
It does. 80 career sacks. Dude, man, I'm looking at some of your years, and you could play.
Thanks.
1998, 7.5 sacks and 149 tackles. That's the well-rounded linebacker right there.
That was the year where Jim Johnson was a defensive coordinator, and he just used me all over the field, and I just ran and ran and ran and ran and ran and made tackles and just got after quarterbacks. It was fantastic.
96, your last year in Pittsburgh, 13 sacks.
That was only in 14 games.
Yeah. He knows. Chad knows. I hadn't even looked at that. That was in 14 games.
Yeah.
Give me 16. I'm probably in 14 and a half.
Yeah, I was on my way to setting the Steelers sack record, and then, high ankle sprain happened, and Bill wanted me to be fresh for the playoffs. I got three sacks the first round of the playoffs against the Colts and Harbaugh. So I was lighting it up that year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was feeling it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, you put a year together with 7.5 sacks and 149 tackles, 117. How do you get paid today with those kind of numbers?
Yeah.
Woo! Well,
you know, but obviously the pay is much greater now. But when I got paid, the old guys were like, all this money now.
Right, right, right. You're right.
Yeah. But sure, who wouldn't love a $100 million deal?
I hope the Levante Davids of the world thank the Chad Browns for paving the way, just like you thanked. Who are the linebackers that you thanked?
Hardy Nickerson.
Hardy Nickerson.
Guys like that.
Yeah.
Early free agents, guys like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Dude, you can play a little bit.
That was all right.
You can play. All right. More on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Let's see. One of these texters who listens very closely over the years, Chad, you enjoy tackling Rod Smith. You blew him up in Seattle on October 14th, 2001, and have a poster of it.
Yes.
Is that true?
I lifted Rod Smith off his feet, ran for three steps, and then pile drove him on his neck. It was awesome. It was awesome.
Did he make a little noise like,
Yeah, it was more than that noise. I got him good.
Yeah.
I got him good.
Yeah.
I took personal offense to somebody running a crossing route, a receiver as a linebacker. Really? This is what you're going to do?
Uh-huh.
You want to catch the ball here?
Yeah.
No, you're going to have second thoughts, my friend.
Right.
Yes. Go tell coach, don't run that crap up in here anymore.
Texter says, most underrated statistic in all of sports is tackles.
No. Because you can suck as a linebacker and make tackles 10 yards downfield. Teams can attack you and run the ball right at you because you're not very good, and you can make tackles, but they're all 10 yards downfield.
Right.
So, tackles itself don't tell a good story.
Solo tackles?
Nah, even that doesn't tell a good story.
No?
No.
So there's not a tackling, the tackling stat does not tell the story.
I think if you're a defensive lineman, you've got good tackle numbers. That speaks a lot about your game because you're chasing the ball.
Right.
You're getting off of blocks. But as a linebacker, you need more than tackles to tell the story.
Well, even like somebody like a Ray Lewis, what's the story of all his high tackle numbers? Well, he played in back of such a great defensive line that he was always kept clean.
Tony Siragusa, Sam Adams.
They just funneled everybody to him.
Right. But, okay, guy like London Fletcher. 2,000 career tackles, that's amazing. That is an amazing number. 16 years, 2,000 career tackles, that is mind-blowing to me, and I played the position.
By the way, as I'm looking at your stats at Pro Football Reference, the picture of you, wow, you kind of, Mark Schlereth fat face going, going there too.
But that's when I was my most powerful.
You were.
So that's when I was probably year 7 or 8, that picture. And I started to thicken up.
Yeah.
I was very powerful man at that point.
Yes, powerful. Powerful.
Like stink, fat face.
Yeah. Guess you got to get a fat face to get powerful. My question is, why aren't I more powerful?
He's fat.
Touche, my friend. Touche.
All right. We'll get to some more of your texts as we roll on next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
Scott Brown in for Stink. Got this text.
Scott Brown.
You ever butter up Mark like this, Mike, about his NFL career? Well, here's the difference. Here's the difference. There's two big differences. One, Chad's got, like, all kinds of numbers.
Right.
And stats.
We gotta ask
to go along with his career. Mark was an offensive lineman. There are no stats. Secondly, why do I need to butter up Mark when Mark does such a great job of buttering up himself?
Yeah, what are you asking
my job,
about?
My job.
How many holding penalties do you have that
right,
year?
My job is to try to knock Mark down a peg or two. I'm not trying to boost him up. Okay? Anybody who's listening to Mark knows he does not have a self-esteem problem.
Oh, man.
Okay. Somebody sent in a picture of during a Seattle-Denver game. There's you, John, and Stink. Now, you're definitely bulked up, but you still look somewhat athletic. In this picture, I can't tell where Mark's belly, shoulders, neck, and head really begin and end. It's just one big... I mean, it's like literally, like look at his head.
Yeah.
It's
like one body part.
Yes.
It's all connected
all
together.
All connected. Head, neck, shoulders, gut.
Oh, I hated playing against Mark. I absolutely hated it. I hated playing against the Broncos, period. But Mark,
that twice a year.
In particular, I hated against playing Mark.
Why?
Because he just held all the time.
Oh, are we getting this, Ben?
He held all the time, and then the you know, that's when they were doing the cut blocking thing, and the leg whips and the cleats and the thigh and the shin gashes. It was hazardous duty to play the Broncos back then. I hated it. Hated it.
They were very effective with what they did.
They were very good, no doubt about it. And the fact that I lived here in town and I would see those guys in the off season, Howard Griffin, lived maybe four or five houses away from me. And I would see Howard in the off season, his kids and my kids went to the same school. So, you know, Howard's a fullback. I'm, you know, playing linebacker. We're, you know, smashing faces 20 times a game. I would win my share of the battles, but, you know, the Broncos would win the game. They'd point to the scoreboard afterwards. You know, I'm walking in King Supers or Safeway, and there's Mark or Dan Neal or somebody, and I got to, like, keep my head down. Guys beat us twice this year by, like, 40 total points.
Okay, let me ask you an honest question. They were very effective, what they did up front. Were they dirty?
Oh, filthy. Filthy dirty. Filthy dirty. There's very few times outside the Broncos where I felt like my health was in jeopardy. You were half worried about trying to make a tackle on Terrell Davis, but the other half of your brain was preoccupied with trying to survive the game. Because they weren't hitting you super hard. It was all that cut blocking stuff. How are my knees going to survive this game? So, you know, when you see teammates going down with broken ankles, Cortez Kinney broken ankle against the Broncos, Hall of Famer, rest in peace, that kind of stuff. Yeah, you start to get concerned and you start making business decisions. Does my knee survive this play? Do I make the tackle? I survive the play. Does Terrell Davis get stopped short of the first down? No, he gets the first down. Otherwise, you know, Mark was going to break my knee in half. That cut blocking stuff was insane, man. I'm happy the league got rid of it because it creates a, you should not be Yes. Should you be worried about your health out there as a player? And should you make decisions about how you deal with a particular play or tackle or block based on body parts? Yes. But you should not spend the whole game terrified about your knees and ankles. And that's what you did when you played those Broncos all the time. I hated it.
So the Broncos came up on the schedule. You were like, Bronco week.
Yeah, but I much preferred it when we played in Seattle because at least we were on turf. And I didn't have to worry about being spiked with a cleat. So at least I could leave the game without some kind of giant shin gash that was, you know, was going to be in pop. Because as a player, I got to, you know, I got to get in hot tubs. I got to get in cold tubs. I got this large, giant, 8-inch open wound on my shin. It's not going to heal for 6 weeks. I got to worry about it being infected. All because Mark gashed me with a cleat.
Dirty Mark Schlereth.
Right. So it,
dirty.
Not, not only did it affect me that game, but for the next 6 weeks, I'm got to cover this thing each time I get in the hot tub. I got to put Neosporin on it. I got to tend with it when I get out of the shower. My sheets are sticking to me, all because of Mark. And if he couldn't cut you, he would try to leg whip you. And if he couldn't leg whip you, he would try to cleat you as you were running by.
Wow, he used all the tricks in the book, huh?
You don't play as long as Mark played without learning the tricks.
You know, I'm almost thinking like Mark Schlereth was to offensive linemen what that pitcher in Major League was, the spitballer and everything.
Yes.
He's like, you know, look, Vaughn, you know, the day will come when, you know, you're not going to be able to blow it by people and you'll resort to every trick in the book. Vaseline and Mark Schlereth was kind of like that, huh?
I think I said to Mark at least once a game, if it was just a straight up battle, I would destroy you.
Uh-huh.
And he would just laugh and go back to the huddle. Because, yeah, he knew it wasn't a straight-up battle.
He knew all the tricks.
If he was on the backside of a play, the referee's eyes are going to follow the play. So if he's on the backside, he can hold to his heart's content. And as soon as Terrell Davis cuts back, he lets go. I'm still on the backside because Mark's been holding me. Now TD's gone for a 15-yard gain. This is ridiculous. You've figured out all the cheat codes,
uh-huh,
and you've mastered them. So you don't ever have to go heads up with me. Cause you know, I'm too quick. I'm too fast. There's no way you can handle me. But all that other stuff.
Holding, cleats,
even
leg
the plane,
whips,
yes,
it even
the
blocks.
It even the playing field. And so Mark's now, you know, a Pro Bowler. And I'm like, this dude can't even, he can't block me at all without this other crap.
Have you found this cathartic at all?
No.
I'm talking about it.
I'm over here sweating. I'm sweating now. I am sweating, recalling all these emotions of hatred for Mark and every member of the Broncos offensive line. Tom Nalen.
Good stuff.
Tony Jones. My CU brother, Matt. Matt Lepsis.
Yeah.
Yes. All those guys. Neal.
So when Mark says that he was out there dispensing justice, he wasn't really dispensing justice as much as he was what? We need a new term. Because dispensing justice is like mano a mano. I'm stealing your will. Sounds like he was more like a offensive line junk baller, you know?
I would give him Dirty Harry was dispensing justice. But he clearly crossed the line. And he got yelled at by the police sergeant. And so Dirty Harry was getting rid of the bad guys, but in a very dirty way. Marcus was like that. So he wasn't some upstanding, great cop citizen who's out there arresting the bad guys and getting kittens out of trees. No, Mark was, if he was a cop, when he was putting you in the cop car, he didn't grab the top of your head and get you in the car. He rammed your head into the door every time.
Well, if you're lucky, well, do you, punk?
this text, geez, Chad, I haven't seen this much crying since Paxton on the sideline.
Oh,
in the studio. I'll wedge drive mediate the whole thing, and we'll figure this thing out. Day number 2192 of the Paxton Lynch smear campaign. All right, we'll get to some of your checks, more of your texts, including I love your perspective on linebackers. So I've heard this term with one of the Bronco draft picks, cross training, but not in the way we normally hear it. I want to get your thoughts on that next. One last leftover from your talking about your battles with that dirty, no good Mark Schlereth. Texter says, so Stink was less Superman, more Deadpool?
Yeah. Just dirty.
Well, when Mark comes back, we'll have to let him get his side of the story. So we'll look forward to that a little bit later on in the week.
I think he will admit my story is far more rooted in the truth than any other story he's told.
Uh-huh. I don't know if he's talked at length about his battles with you. So we'll definitely get to the bottom of this. Mm-hmm. Don't worry.
Okay.
Look who you're talking to.
Right.
You can be sure.
The wedge driver will drive the wedge. Yes.
I will get to the bottom of this. Yes. Don't you worry. Don't you worry at all. Crystal ball. Who's the Broncos quarterback opening day?
I'm saying today I'm feeling like it's Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah.
No! God, please, no!
And not because Teddy Bridgewater is going to go out there and light it up, but the organizational change in philosophy from let's outscore him last year, which was a terrible plan, had to be hatched in Elway's office because quarterbacks think like that. Defensive coordinators don't ever think like that. To now, let's go to our head coach's strength. He's a defensive coordinator. Let's draft for defense. Let's play good defense. Let's be clean, efficient on offense. Let's do no harm offensively.
Get the ball into our playmakers' hands.
Yes.
High percentage. Let them go make plays.
Do no harm. That's what a defensive coordinator wants from his offense. Don't put my defense in bad spots.
Well, there is something to that. I always hear that, well, with all the Broncos' skill position players, they're just a better quarterback away from really exploding as an offense. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. If these guys are all special, and they're matchup nightmares, and they run amazing routes, and they have great feet, and all this, shouldn't they make the quarterback look better?
Right.
Than he really is? What about just the idea of Jerry Jeudy just runs a route so clean, so perfectly, that he's so open that there should be no problem just throwing to a wide open Jerry Jeudy for a big touchdown, or KJ Hamler runs past his guy, or Noah Fant as one of those mismatched tight ends is able to create space and box out a guy, and all it is a simple throw. Why does it have to be on the quarterback to bring out the best in these skill position guys? They're all first and second round draft picks. How about they make the quarterback look better?
There is something that happens here. And I think it happens in every NFL city where fans and the media begin to fall in love with the players. And they view them, here's that word again, in a vacuum. Does Jerry Jeudy run great routes? Sure. But then how does he stack up against the best receivers in the league? I know he's only coming off his rookie year. But we tend to boost these guys up higher than they actually are as far as the rest of the league. Is Noah Fant a promising tight end? He is. Is he a top 10 tight end in the NFL?
No.
Okay. So, you know, if we talk as if somehow he's a matchup nightmare like Waller, like Kyle Pitts is going to be, like Travis Kelce, but he's not. Does Jerry Jeudy run great routes? Sure. But is he a top 10 receiver? No, he's not.
But is that the quarterback's fault?
No.
That they're not top 10 tight ends and receivers yet?
No, they're just not there yet. And we don't know if they're going to actually ever get there.
So you bristle at the idea that these guys are being held back by the quarterback play?
Jerry Jeudy's got his own issues separate from quarterback play he needs to conquer. Is he a great route runner? Sure. Those drops last year, particularly drops in clutch moments, were crushing. The emotional immaturity, the, you know, being a baby, all that stuff. Fix that. Certainly don't blame the quarterback for all that stuff. That's on you. You can't be at Alabama and be the best team with the best players every position all the time. Sometimes you got to fight through some things, young fella. That's how it works in the NFL. You know, you always can't be on the number one thing. So I just want to put that out there. I'm not saying these guys suck. I'm not saying that they don't have promise in the future. But let's be realistic and not view these guys because they were taken the first round or second round as suddenly they're the best.
Well, this texter, clearly you are in his crosshairs. Here you go. Chad is a jackass. Getting great wide receivers and better on offense so you could score more points is not a stupid decision, you idiot. And then another one talking about Jeudy. He's a rookie. Jack bleep, give them time.
He'll be very nice.
He'll be a top 10 wide receiver easily.
Great. Let me know when that happens. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying we're having discussions as if that is the case. We're having discussions as if Noah Fant is there. So that they're not there. That's the realistic picture. Yes, you look at this team. You got your Bronco glasses. You think every player is going to step up with each season and somehow get better. That's always not the case. Hopefully it's the case. But the thought that somehow it's just a quarterback away, you would be elevating all those guys past where they currently are.
So if I dream of getting Aaron Rodgers, okay, so my automatic assumption is they get Aaron Rodgers, Noah Fant is instantly a top 10 tight end. Jerry Jeudy is instantly a top 10 wide receiver. You say not necessarily.
Did Aaron Rodgers turn Jimmy Graham into a top 10 tight end? He didn't. Jimmy Graham's always been a guy with unfulfilled promise. Drew Brees didn't turn Jimmy Graham into an amazing world beater. Jimmy Graham possesses a much better skill set than what Noah Fant has. Jimmy Graham played with Russell Wilson.
Okay, but Aaron Rodgers turned Devontae Adams into a top five wide receiver, did he not?
No, Devontae Adams turned Devontae Adams to a top wide receiver. Jordy Nelson, it was a great marriage. But Jordy Nelson was a legit top 10 receiver for a while there.
So I think what I'm hearing is you're pushing back on a belief that I've had for a long time that wide receivers simply play a dependent position. They're only as good as the quarterback they play with.
Julio
yes!
Jones. No.
Yeah, well, we know how Clash feels about that stuff.
Yes. It takes two to tango. Let's put it that way.
All right. This is a conversation we can continue because you're coming back again tomorrow.
Yes. 5:17 tomorrow, baby.
5:17?
One more minute.
Oh.
One more minute.
Oh. I'm
pushing it.
Whoa. All right. If you think you can set the alarm for 5:17 and get here on time, all right, my man.
I'll be here.
We shall see. All right. Hey, no, I really appreciate it. Thank you. All right. Go deal with your reptiles.
All right. I'm off to ship snakes.
There you go. We got Sandy and Orlando. They're coming your way next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.